welcome to the Common Geeking Program, a book club podcast where each week three of us read up on a topic and discuss it from our own geeky and nerdy perspectives. This week, I'm your host. My name is Jeff, and we will be discussing the movie Run, Lola, Run.
I think it's pronounced Lola Rent.
No, it's more like Manny!
That joke will make sense once we get to the summary, and we're going to be specifically focusing on films or narratives with a not entirely linear narrative, and I'm joined by two lovely people, each of whom has brought their own stuff to the table today, and they are...
Hi, I am your first geeky or nerdy perspective this week. My name is Colin, and I'm talking about Twilight.
Oh God. All right.
No, Star Trek Enterprise Season 3, Episode 8, Twilight?
Oh, okay.
Fuck you.
Wait, what did you guys think I was talking about?
Shut up.
The very popular book and movie series Twilight?
That's definitely a joke. He definitely knows what we thought he was talking about.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
The obviously much more well-known property.
Our second person today, whose voice you've no doubt heard, is actually going to be a new member of the podcast, taking over for Eddie Ryan, who's going to be leaving us for...
He's been banished to the Shadow Realm.
Yeah, for killing Austin. Anyway, so we are replacing Eddie with...
Ryan Mossbarger, who shares half the name of Ryan Eddie.
Yeah, this is Eddie Ryan Mossbarger. Please, Edward is my father's name. You can call me Ryan.
They like to typecast as much as possible.
Typecasting Ryan.
We need a Ryan.
It's going to be kind of hard to replace you when you leave, because I don't know if Mossbarger is a really common first name.
I'm sure there's some German that has
but
that.
But if it is, I really hope his last name is Edward. Did I tell you about the time that Eddie and I went on Facebook and we found someone in Schenectady who is named Ryan Edwards? And then a friend requested him just for shits and giggles. That's funny. Anyway, Ryan, what are you going to be talking about this week?
I'm going to be talking about Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic.
Fun stuff. All right, we're going to be starting by summarizing our topic and domains, and then we're going to be openly discussing, and then we're going to be moving on to a competitive rating section to determine which of these two fools has contributed best today, and whether or not they really liked Run, Lola, Run as a film. So with that, I'd say let's move on to the summary.
Yay!
Doodly-doo. All right, guys, this week, as I said, we're going to be talking about Run, Lola, Run, which is a German language film that was released in 1998. The main premise of the story is that it follows the same event played out three times, and we'll talk about like the kind of intersections between those times, but basically it's the story of this girl named Lola and her boyfriend, what's his name, Manny? Manny is his name?
Manny! Yeah.
Manny!
Yeah, Manny calls her and he's got this problem because he's involved with this shady guy who's probably like a drug dealer or something and he owes him a lot of money.
I think it's the mob.
Yeah, a mob thing. I'm not sure. And he left this big bag of money that he was supposed to deliver on the train and he needs to now make up, what, 100,000 marks, which I don't know what that...
Conservatively, like 10 American dollars at this time. Let's be real.
Not in 1998, though, right? I don't know.
I don't know. I feel like that's true.
In a strange coincidence, today my roommate left his wallet at home, and I had to grab it, and I had to run for 3 15-minute sequences in teal pants with a camera directly up my asshole. Yeah.
And then I use my vaguely, weirdly placed superpowers of time travel and sonic blasts to change things drastically throughout the event.
So,
and also my superhuman-like stamina to run for 20 minutes straight going... like full-on sprint.
How is she... Yeah, okay, so first thing I gotta say, now given the title Run, Lola... Like, run, in the American localization, the word run is in the title twice, so I shouldn't have been surprised that
she was running.
A lot of the movie is just her running. And it's like, she's never out of breath.
She's a little bit of, no, yeah, no, that is true, but.
No, like, look, okay, look at the television show Lost, yeah. And look at Matthew Fox's character, like, he wakes up and he's like, and she's, like, sprinting halfway across Europe.
Okay, but.
And she's just like.
Okay, what first thing I'll say is that it's all clearly in the span of a small place, because she runs to multiple places in 20 minutes. Second of all, she also might not be totally human, so I don't know if that's,
yeah.
Like, the biggest,
Pretty obvious when she screams so loud it destroys all glass within like a 50-foot radius.
Yeah, star. And we'll talk about that because that is some slightly subtler shit in the movie, which I would not say is its main sort of thing going on. But the basic thing is that she has to, in 20 minutes, somehow get 100,000 marks for her boyfriend. Otherwise, he's going to be killed by this mob boss. It goes through the event three times. It's a pretty like standard film school sort of trippy movie.
It is. It felt very film school.
Yeah.
Well, the insane thing is, if you watch the movie, you're like, oh, this is like an 80s film. And then you look it up, and then it's 1998. And I guess it kind of makes sense. Like,
well, German
1998 is like American 1988. Like.
Yeah, exactly. Despite the apparent lack in super crisp, you know, like film cinematography and shit like that, it is like shot pretty interestingly.
It is. There's a really clear sense of style and sense of motion through this, and the fact that it revisits multiple places really kind of drives that home quite a bit. I always enjoy things that are more thematic than they are plot heavy. Not always, but generally. And this movie like had pretty clear visual and dialogue and tonal themes throughout, and I think it did itself a service by exploring the same spaces in different times. Because what happens is she goes through the first time, she dies. Time resets. Her boyfriend dies. Time resets. They succeed.
Yeah.
But like at the beginning, she's running down the staircase and there's a dog. The first time she runs past it. The second time it trips her. And the third time,
oh no,
the kid trips her.
Oh, the kid trips her. Sorry.
Which is weird to me because he seems to be the only person who like does anything differently outside of like butterfly effect.
Yeah,
it's true. I think he's the source of this continuity because in the first timeline, she gets scared of the dog. So I think it stops her for like half a second.
Yeah.
And then the second timeline, she gets tripped and that delays her a little bit more.
Yeah. And it's just like a deterministic exploration of how that time displacement affects her journey.
Right. Except the implication with her is that she also has a slight bit of like memory from it.
Does she?
Yeah, she does.
Yeah, she turns the gun. Yeah, the gun safety in the second timeline.
Oh,
yeah. So that we're not just like spewing things to each other. Let's go through how each timeline goes out. So the first timeline, I guess the dog growls at her and she gets a little bit scared, but ultimately she goes past it. And then like there's a few random encounters which we don't really need to get into, but it like does a mechanic of it, like shows a snapshot of the rest of those people's lives. And it kind of shows, like, oh, how this, like, one thing is going to change the course of their lives. The only person who I think is important to mention is a guy that she passes who's on a bike. In the first one, he, like, tries to sell her the bike, and then he just, like, goes on with his way, and it shows the snapshots of the rest of his life, and he, like, ends up getting mugged and then meeting a girl in the hospital and getting married or whatever.
Yeah, every time she bumps into someone, it shows a series of photographs as a flash forward to like how this moment impacted them. Because like the second time around when she bumps into the guy with the bike, they just kind of yell at each other.
That's the third time.
Oh, the third time.
Yeah.
And the second time is very similar to the first time.
Except he becomes a drug addict.
But then for some reason, instead of marrying someone, he becomes a homeless drug addict with a very crazy beard.
I guess it kind of represents, I don't know, like the butterfly effect. You change one small thing and it...
Yeah, that is the big thing.
Yeah, the whole movie is about determinism.
Right.
The lady with the baby card is honestly the most depressing one because in the first timeline, she abuses her child, loses it, and then ends
stealing someone else's
baby in the park.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I'm glad that that's what happened because I thought I was crazy for reading it that way.
All because she thought Lola was like an asshole.
So after she runs into the guy on the bike, her plan each time is to go to the bank and talk to her father who works at the bank. And she kind of runs into him having an interaction with a woman who he's clearly cheating with. That interaction goes a bunch of different ways. In the first timeline,
pretty rough.
Yeah, she ends up getting mad at him and is like not entirely sure about the cheating, but he's also like refusing to give her the money. she ends up leaving.
Oh, no, she gets, like, thrown out the first timeline. He, like, disowns her.
Oh, she gets... Oh, you're right. You're right. He says, like, oh, I'm not your real...
Like, it's brutal.
You're right. I totally forgot about that. He's like, oh, I'm not your real father.
Yeah, and he's like, I'm not even your dad.
You're the cuckoo egg in the nest or whatever.
Which is, like, part of the implication that she might not be totally, like, human, or there's some, like, weird circumstance with her birth that gives her all these weird powers.
Because we don't know her dad, we can assume she's like Star-Lord and Kurt Russell is flying around fucking everybody
okay,
in the universe.
I mean, you know, it's also the fact that she can kind of remember things through different, like, things of time.
She's a Time Lord.
But yeah, so I think the, at least for sake of time, that interaction in the bank with her dad is probably like the most important thing to revisit. It's the most drawn out because the first time she gets kicked out, the second time
she catches them. She catches them and gets so angry with him that she ends up stealing a security guy's gun and robs him.
Yeah, holds her dad at gunpoint.
Right, right. And she knows to turn the safety off because the first timeline ends with her and Manny robbing a convenience store, and he shows her how to turn the safety off on his gun. So that's like part of the implication that she remembers things throughout multiple timelines.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the second timeline, she leaves, and then she's about to give the money to Manny, and then he gets hit by a truck, which was affected by something that she did earlier.
Yeah, because the glass broke. That was the EMT vehicle that like hit a pane of glass and had to stop for a little while.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then in the third continuity, she's going a little bit faster because she jumps over the dog, and as a result, she ends up not hitting a car, which, like, had a guy who knew her father in it, so that he ends up getting there in time and picks up the father, so the dad's not even there, and she doesn't interact with him, so she has to go do something else, and then she ends up going to a casino.
It was a frustrating deus ex machina to see her go through the bank twice, and then suddenly just like, oh, she could have gone to the casino the whole time, and used her screaming powers to win craps.
Yeah.
That's roulette, not craps, fuck.
Yeah, and then in the third one, she... like, almost hits the guy with the bike, and then he ends up, like, yelling at her and going away. And then we see that he goes...
overwhelmed by his need for a sausage.
Story of my fucking life.
Yeah, he goes and he picks up food, and he ends up running into this homeless guy who is the guy who stole the money from the train in the beginning and sells that guy his bike. And then the homeless guy who now has a bike ends up, like, going by the street where Manny is, and Manny, like, starts chasing him down and then gets the money back. And then, like, gives the guy his gun for some reason.
Yeah, that's fucking insane.
We sold him the gun for 100,000 marks.
Yeah.
Roughly 10 US dollars.
I'll discuss this more later, but I can't fucking stand Manny.
he's
the worst.
Yeah. But yeah, ultimately that ends up, so then he ends up giving the money to the guy, and then Lola ends up, he's like, oh, it's all fine. And then they walk away, and then he goes like, hey, what's in that bag? And then she just gets a smile on her face, because now they actually have 100,000 marks to themselves.
Yep.
Well, what I thought about it, because in some of the in-between things, every time they do a time flip,
they have this
kind of in-between moment where they talk about their relationship. I kind of took it as like, I'm not going to tell you what this is because I'm thinking about leaving you. That's what I got from it.
Oh, really? I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, because they have a talk about the relationship, and Manny pretty much straight up says, like, if I were to die, you'd be sad for a week or two, but you'd love the attention, and then you'd get over it.
I mean, I think that what those scenes were just like them having sort of like insecure philosophical pillow talk. I don't know. And I definitely took those to be flashbacks, not like a...
Same. Though, I mean, there is sort of like a purgatorial like aspect to
it. No, it's definitely like it has that vibe to it. But it I think that the implication is that those were like conversations that they'd had in the past, sort of. I don't know.
I'm going to not draw inferences from the implications of this film because the whole thing is batshit crazy.
Yeah. I know. It's great.
You know what's real crazy? Manny gets arrested in the beginning. That's like the impetus for this. He leaves the bag on the train.
Yeah.
He pops out. And then two, I guess, security guards decide to arrest him. But they let him keep his gun? Did you guys realize that?
No, I didn't even think about that.
Because it seems like they just keep him off the train to be dicks. But if they're just doing that, I get that. But it seemed like they were arresting him.
I think they're trying to stop him from getting back on the train, but I don't know. Yeah, I kind of forgot about that.
Typical German police. You have only one shot at the train.
All right. Well, I think that maybe we can fill in some gaps later, but that's more or less the gist of the story.
Yeah. Why, Jeff? Why'd you want to bring that this week?
Well, I don't know. I think that it's a really interesting film to talk about, and I think we can definitely go into the way that it kind of utilizes the sort of non-linear thing, because I think that there are more typical examples of like non-linear storytelling, like Memento or something like that, which. I mean, I guess technically is linear, just in the wrong way, but...
Well, it's a linear story, but it's non-linear telling, so whatever.
Yeah. Well, every story is linear.
Yes. Except...
except, I guess, time travel stuff, so I guess this sort of isn't, but... I think we can talk about later about how diegetic the like non-linearness of this story is, but basically, I don't know, I just thought it would be a fun thing to talk about. All right, Colin. God, there's a thing I'm supposed to read. And you're actually here to fucking enforce it, so I'm going to do it. All right, guys, we're going to be moving on to the domains, where our representatives are going to talk about what they have brought to the table today, and we're going to start with Colin. Colin, what did you bring, and why?
Okay, I gotta say two things before I start. One, I resent the idea that only three episodes per cycle are properly executed, and that's only because I'm present?
I think that the proper, unquote, execution of the episodes is a subjective thing, and your reads are not necessarily what the rest of us would think is proper, given the language that they're used.
Yeah, Colin, you're Johnny Law, and everybody else is the rebels here.
Anyway, go ahead.
The second thing is... I don't know who's editing this episode. Probably
it's
you,
me.
Jeff. But
yeah.
At some point in the middle of the summary, I let out a dejected sigh, and I hope you leave it in.
I heard
because that sigh represented the moment that I realized I chose the wrong domain. But I'm going to stick with it.
What did you want to choose?
So I should have chosen Community Season 3, Episode 6, the... fucking the one where they roll the die.
Oh, that's such a good one.
Darkest Timeline.
Oh, there's an episode of Scrubs like that too, where the with the
yeah the episode of Scrubs is probably more on point.
Didn't that almost win like a Saturn Award?
Yeah no it did. Yeah. it's like acclaimed as the best episode of the series, but
so good.
Yeah,
well, if you want to change that, I will allow it, as long as you put a very deadpan reading of what you would be repping so I can just edit it back into the original spot. So it sounds super fake.
And you have to apologize.
Either way.
You know what? I dug my grave. I'll save that for another time.
Alrighty.
So I'm representing Enterprise, Season 3, Episode 8, Twilight. So in order to give you the backstory, first I need to summarize the previous two seasons of Enterprise. So, episode by episode, here we go.
Star Trek Enterprise, right?
Yes.
Start timer now.
For the okay. listeners.
Season 3 of Enterprise, the plot is that there's a species that is trying to destroy Earth.
Okay.
And... Enterprise in like its early days of Starfleet, like they're not well equipped for anything. They're not a huge force.
Well, they're not even technically Starfleet yet.
They're Starfleet, but they're not the Federation, so that doesn't exist yet.
Question and, right now that I'm going to edit out because it's not at all relevant, but I don't want to forget to ask you this. Do you still keep up with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Colin?
Yes.
Because I really fucking need to talk to someone about the most recent season.
I got to finish. I need to watch the last three episodes of the most recent season. But yeah, it was
go
good.
Ahead.
So back to Scott Bakula saving the world. Go.
So back to Scott Bakula saving the world. The Enterprise NX flies into something called the Expanse, and it's a place where space is all sorts of fucked up, and they don't know why. So they're just chasing down the species through this thing for the whole season. It's one of the best seasons of the franchise, in my opinion. But this episode, one of those spatial anomalies causes some weird warping of stuff in the ship, and it knocks out Captain Archer, played by Scott Bakula.
Quantum Leap's Scott Bakula.
Yeah. So what the way the episode starts is he wakes up, he guts on the bridge, he's like, what's going on? And everybody's like, get him out of here. And then you see Earth blow up, and then it cuts to the very cheery theme song.
God damn, this sounds a lot like the fucking Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season.
Yeah. So basically what happens is Scott Bakula, Captain Archer, finds out that he was affected by some parasites that stop the development of long-term memory. So it becomes a bit like 50 First Dates, because his Vulcan first officer, after the destruction of Earth and humanity is just in like a flotilla now, while everybody else is trying to fight for survival, they settle down on SETI Alpha 5, fun little Easter egg for Wrath of Khan fans out there.
Okay.
And she goes through the 50 First Dates thing of like telling him, hey, this is today, this is what the last 10 years have been. And the doctor from the ship has recently discovered that the parasites in his brain exist out of flux with our timeline. They exist in a quantum state.
Oh, okay.
So if they can kill all of the things in the present, it will erase them from every point where they intersect with our timeline. He will never have been okay. infected.
Sure.
And then it more or less undoes what happened, and then they just go back and it resets into the mission. So it's one of those like bottle episodes.
You know, like a MacGuffin.
Yeah, it is.
You know.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, like a bad plot device.
A diegetic MacGuffin?
Yes, but it is nonlinear in the way that the story is told, because one, you're not told up front what time period things are taking place in. Two, the exploration of the plot is done primarily through flashback. And three, the resolution of the episode is done by altering the timeline in particular. So it's one of those things where it's not quite like Pulp Fiction, where it's a straight line story told out of order. And it's not quite like Run Lola Run, where it's a multi-layered story told repeatedly. It is sort of an in-between. And to be honest, it's one of the episodes I enjoy most in the show, not because I think the time travel stuff is cool. Star Trek time travel is dubious at best.
Most things time travel are dubious at best. Let's be real here.
Ryan and I talked about this about Star Trek in our last episode together, also about a German time travel story.
Yep.
Which is interesting.
Oh. And
we are forever
dark?
Linked.
Forever
this is our
linked.
Dark.
This is our dark. Me!
I am become Patrick? Question mark?
Oh, no. Pat, no. What happened? You were in Arizona.
Wow.
Everything was so good.
Way to just showcase how much more you feel about Pat than me. The thought of Pat becoming anything like me is just so terrible to you.
I was more thinking it through the lens that like you like consumed Patrick and absorbed him into your person.
Oh, that's the clear implication, yeah. I'm coming for you, Pat.
I think that the episode Twilight does a pretty good job of jerking you around the timeline in a way that makes it intriguing and gives you the time to connect to each of the characters' individual stories, which I may talk about in the discussion, but that is my domain.
All right. Good stuff. Ready? I think that will bring us to Ryan. Ryan, what are you bringing on your first official episode of the Common Geeking Program?
Beep, 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 beep.
All right, everybody.
Star Wars, you fucking nerd. All right, let's hear it.
Cue John Williams fanfare. Star Wars, Knight of the Old Republic, or KOTOR for short, is a game developed by BioWare for the original Xbox in 2003.
Fun stuff.
It takes place several thousand years before the original trilogy and centers around some dude with amnesia whose ship is attacked and destroyed by the Sith.
So this is also prior to the prequels?
Yes, extremely.
That makes sense. Yeah.
After crash landing in your escape pod, you find yourself on a city planet similar to Coruscant, but not Coruscant, and on the lamb from the Sith invaders. KOTOR takes this basic and honestly it's pretty cliched premise and transforms it into one of the best Star Wars stories ever made in any format. You slowly build a cadre of ragtag friends and start making your way across the galaxy in search for the key of this generation of Sith's rapid ascension, the Starforge.
Okay.
A literal forge in space that's powered by a star.
Like the one in fucking Avengers Infinity War?
Maybe.
I'm trying to remember what that's called. I wanted to say the name, but I forgot. Damn it.
Where we have to go is Nibidalea. That's a made-up word.
Oh, it's made-up. You travel to a bunch of planets, and through your choices, you kind of sculpt who your amnesiac is, or maybe kind of who he was, and you slowly become more powerful and unlock...
Jason Bourne.
Basically. You don't remember who you are, but you got all this fucking shit that you can do, and you slowly kind of unlock a lot of your, like, forgotten potential.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Pretty early on, you discover that you are force sensitive, and through training and a really dorky training montage, you become a Jedi. And at least in name, you become like a Jedi. Like, you can be pretty shady and somehow you're still a Jedi. Like, kill a bunch of people.
I mean, weren't the prequels Jedi also like a little shady?
They're a little bit shady, yeah.
They're more morally questionable, yeah.
They're more like close-minded. Like, some of the Jedi in like the shows and, you know, auxiliary media are a little bit shady, but...
BioWare had the choice between either doing a episode 2 game or doing one so far in the past they can kind of make up whatever they wanted. They chose this one because, obviously, the ground is not rich in the prequel trilogy.
Yeah.
And I think they wanted a lot more creative freedom for storytelling.
Yeah, because it's all sand.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all sand. So rough. I hate sand.
It's so sandy. But you are not sandy. And that is why I love you.
Not sandy. You're so smooth. But Kotor uses a similar binary morality system that a lot of BioWare games have. If you've ever played Mass Effect, it's more along the lines of like the Renegade versus Paragon thing, but it's light versus dark.
Oh, okay.
And it actually works out really well, especially how early this game was, as like the first kind of decision-making system.
So you're sort of learning stuff about your character as you go on. Do you get like flashbacks or something as he's like remembering, or like how is it non-linear in the telling?
Well, there's certain story points where you find out more about your past, and it's kind of non-linear in the fact that for most missions, there's multiple ways to do them.
Oh, okay.
And there's no really, I would say, correct way to go through the game. And a lot of it ties into the morality system.
Mm-hmm.
How you interact with the people that you take quests from and the people at large kind of changes how people perceive you and how they treat you.
Okay.
And it kind of gives you the way of treating your character. Like, he can be mustache twirlingly like worst person ever, like, oh, you're a
Kenan Kodish.
You're a widow with three children, I'll steal your stuff. Or you can just be kind of a dick, like, oh, I did this job for you, I'm gonna use my powers to force more money out of you. And on the opposite side, you can be like the paragon of virtue, never taking any reward,
right,
and always doing the right thing. Or you could just be like not an asshole, like you do the job, you get paid for it.
See, I said Kenan when you said the mustache twirling, and I tried to think of somebody in the podcast who's not an asshole, but I don't know.
But yeah, it kind of changes. There's a lot of missions in the game where you can really change, I guess, the perceived outcome of like doing this quest,
right,
on the morality system. So there's a few, I believe, it's been a while since I played, but there's like a few quests where you can accept the quest, and if you run away and come back, you can, like, lie to a person, be like, oh, I didn't find your daughter, she's dead.
Oh, that's funny.
And then the person will give you a reward, and then you can leave. But on the flip side, you can actually do the mission, find the lady, or find the daughter, or whatever, and bring her back.
Hold on, wait, can you get the quest to find their daughter, like, turn around and turn back, like, peekaboo fast, and say, oh, no, she's super dead.
I can't remember.
I Googled it. I can't find her. She's not on LinkedIn.
I looked in this direction, she wasn't there, now pay me. But you can kind of do a lot of that stuff.
So just to clarify here, the kind of connection that you're bringing to Run Lol Run is sort of like the butterfly effect aspect.
The decision making, yeah. Changing different things.
So is there a reason in particular then that you're talking about this game as opposed to like other games where you've got like choices that will drastically change the outcome? Or is it just like, oh, because it's a good one?
Well, this is a good one. And also, like, KOTOR really popularized the BioWare-esque system of like kind of multiple endings and multiple choices and morality. BioWare before this was famous for like the Baldur's Gate kind of series of games, but those are really relegated to PC. This was like the breakaway hit where it became a huge studio that, you know, started to work on things like Mass Effect, which is probably even a bigger franchise than this one. But this was like one of the biggest breakaway hits of like the first gen Xbox.
Right.
I mean, it kind of coincided with the prequels, and it had a story that people could actually like chew into. And it was honestly, it was a better story than a lot of, because the prequels kind of get into this moral gray area of like why you do the things you do. And if you're really a truly good person, why do you care for anything? Because that's kind of the Jedi way. Like, you shouldn't care really about anything. This one kind of breaks into that moral gray area way better.
Okay.
And the main overarching story than like the prequel did.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's one of the first RPGs, at least on consoles, that kind of allowed you to break away from the on-rail system of RPGs where
you have to, your choices are like kind of not really that consequential.
Yeah, they're very limited.
Yeah.
This one, I think, kind of breaks away from that, and it really created a trend.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think, I'm going to want to talk a bit more about that in regards to nonlinear storytelling in the discussion. And I think that's where we're going to be moving on to right about now.
Noise.
All right, guys, with all of our topics and our domain, with goddamn all of our topic and domains summarized. Are you serious? I'm going to yell at you for this right now because you're here.
I listened to all the episodes I'm not in. You have already yelled about it.
I know. But now I can get a response to that. All right, guys, with our topic and our domains.
You can just say with our topic and domains.
That's what I just started saying, and then you interrupted me to say I could say that.
You said you wanted a response. I gave you a response.
All right, guys, with that, with our topic and all of our domains summarized, we're going to be moving on to the discussion. I do right now, because it's fresh in my brain, I want to talk about... So, Ryan, you brought a game that you can take multiple different directions in. I want to have a fucking discussion about whether or not we think that can be considered a nonlinear story or narrative. Not that the outcome of that discussion will at all have any bearing on your ability to win the Gold Star Student Award. I just want to talk about it because I think that's interesting because I feel like that's like a gray area in terms of like, you know,
it does play into the core conceit of role playing, which is you tell your own story through the mechanism given to you. So I guess whether or not it would be nonlinear depends on your subjective experience with that tool.
Right, but I sort of feel like it's like it is a linear story. It's just you have multiple options for different linear stories. You know what I mean? I don't know. I want to hear, Ryan, what do you... I am assuming that you think that it is since you brought it for today. So I want to hear...
I just want to open and say that I feel very attacked right now. And I'm not entirely sure what you guys want. No, I'm just joking. I think it's in the same realm as Run Lola Run, at least in my mind.
If Run Lola Run was a video game,
it would be essentially the same format as KOTOR. You make decision and things change based upon that. And I mean, Run Lola Run's a little bit different. I guess it changes how she treats the dog or if she gets tripped up or whatever. If you look at it not as more of like a meta perspective, more on the macro scale, you can have, I mean, a lot of different experiences with Knights of the Old Republic as compared to the usual game, which you may, I mean, the story is the story.
Yeah.
So like compared to a game like, oh, it's more recent, like The Last of Us, which I played pretty recently, you don't have a whole lot of choice in how the story plays out, even though it's a very dramatic and good story.
You don't have much agency. It's more just completing challenges along the way.
Yeah, and then,
I mean, agency is a lie, but in general.
But I mean, you can drastically change how the story goes through. I mean, one of the most apparent ones is that you get to visit Kashyyyk. Or Kashyyyk, depending on how you want to pronounce it, at a certain point in the story. And you can either kind of empower the local Wookiees in an uprising where because they're being enslaved by the Sith in some like big old bad corporation. You can either like empower them and help them free themselves, or you can like fight all the way to the main boss and be like, nah, I'm like okay with slavery.
Yeah,
just continue what you're doing.
I have a question, Ryan, about KOTOR. Does it, and this is probably before it became a common convention, I actually don't know. Does it have a New Game Plus mode?
I don't think it does. I think this was before New Game Plus became a real thing.
Became like a comp. Yeah, okay.
What is a New Game Plus mode for the listeners and for me?
New Game Plus mode is usually when you complete a game's narrative or story or campaign or whatever, and then it allows you to start it again, but you get bonuses for having beaten the game. So it's almost like launching you through the game again. So sometimes it's like you get to keep your gear or you keep holdovers from your previous run.
I believe they had that in Mass Effect, but I don't know if they have that in KOTOR. They probably have it because it's been re-released a couple different times now. It's like it's on Steam. It's all, I think you can get it on iPad now too. Like I wouldn't be surprised if they did that.
That's what, but you comparing it to Run Lola Run, that's what it makes me think of is a New Game Plus mode. Is she gets to go through these extra things.
Yeah,
and when I first watched the movie, I wrestled with how is this non-linear.
No, I agree with you. I think that
because the story is not necessarily non-linear, but this, I mean, the storytelling is linear, but the story,
I mean,
we don't even know if it's linear or nonlinear. It seems like it's the New Game Plus idea.
I do agree with you on that fact. I think that, like, in the same way that we can question whether a game like... what is the way that you...
KOTOR or Knights of
KOTOR,
the Old Republic.
Yeah. In the same way that we can question whether KOTOR is, like, really nonlinear, like, I think that those same questions can be made of Run, Lola, Run. Because I think the only, like... true traditional sense of like nonlinear storytelling in it is like the flashbacks about, you know, that like relate to the things that are going on in the different timelines, but those are just like, that's not a majority of the movie.
So what you're saying is I have the only domain that actually is nonlinear, and therefore I win the Gold Star Student Award?
No, I'm saying that you have the only domain that is unquestionably nonlinear. I think that the other two bring a bit of a discussion to talk about.
Okay. So... Well, I mean, that's kind of one of the reasons I picked this episode. One, I was having a hard time because my mind kept going to Pulp Fiction, and I haven't seen it in forever, and I didn't love it when I saw it, so I didn't feel like rewatching it. But I just watched – I'm taking a friend of mine through Star Trek now, and I just watched this episode, and Enterprise doesn't have a lot of time travel stuff in it. This episode is one of the few that, like, jumps around, and I do – I was watching Run, Lolo, Run while I was cooking. Mm-hmm. Basically, I had it on my iPad while I was cutting up some food. So, like, my attention was sort of phasing in and out until it looped back to the phone for the first time. And I put my knife down and stopped. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening right now? Because I did not know what I was getting into.
Yeah.
It yanked me into the movie so hard. I was having a hard time trying to think of something else that gave me that experience. And the first time I saw this episode of Enterprise, I was definitely – it's fun to be tricked in a storytelling format. It's fun to know that, like, okay, yeah, there's a whole bunch of information I don't have.
It reminds me, like, the whole, like, tricking aspect of, like, some nonlinear stories remind me of, like, the first season of, like, Westworld. Right? Where you're like, you're watching these events and you think that it's happening in the same time for the longest time. And then like near the end, you're like, oh no, this happened a long time ago.
Yeah. You unless know? All your friends are dicks and they read the internet and they told you when episode 3 came out.
Oh, that's rough. That was like such a good fucking trick ending for me.
I still had a blast watching it. Like, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But no, I think with the episode Twilight, and I'm forcing myself to say the episode Twilight instead of just Twilight.
Twilight. Because I was like listening to that, and I believed you that you were repping Twilight, and I was like, does Twilight have any non-linear stories?
I was hoping, I was really hoping that you would ask me that in the intro, but you know, it's whatever. I'll live. But I think in particular, one other thing that made me connected to Run Lola Run is, as you were saying, those weird interlude scenes between. Yeah. The three runs where Manny and Lola are in bed and they're talking to each other in those intimate moments. I think some of the things that stood out to me most about the episode Twilight is like a lot of it is exposition of the character of T'Pol, the Vulcan, telling Archer like, hey, here's what happened. These are the mechanics at play. But then there are some moments where the doctor is talking to T'Pol, and she's a Vulcan. Vulcans are supposed to be very unemotive people. And after 9 years caring for this man, she's developed feelings for him. And the way they explore it is like, it's not subtle, but it's quiet. It's personal. There's no like swelling music under it. It's just like her hiding the fact that treating this person is devastating to her.
Mm.
And it colors that exposition with a personality that I wasn't expecting when I first saw it. And to me, that's what some of those interlude scenes in Run Lola Run did, because I'm like, dude, your boyfriend's a dumbass. Why are you...
why are you stopping him from getting killed?
Did you not listen to this episode? We already know he's stupid. You should figure that out by now. And as soon as you see them in the bed together, and then he's... like blowing her off, and she's like, why aren't you listening to me? I'm being like really serious right now. That at least helped me understand the dynamic of the relationship. But then the one where he is explaining his fear about losing her and what that would look like if he died and stuff like that.
She blows him off almost instantly.
Yeah. And it colors the rest of the story, which is interesting unto itself, but it colors the rest of that with an extra layer. And that's another thing I think Enterprise did pretty well.
And also going back in the defense of KOTOR, on the macro scale, I believe that there's a lot of like distinctive kind of parallel plots that you can play. But on the micro scale, I mean, there's a lot of flashbacks as you kind of, because the dude's an amnesiac who's slowly kind of remembering
flashback
who he
saves
was.
The day.
And honestly, through those flashbacks, it reveals one of the biggest twists that I would say probably is on par with like the twist in BioShock, where you discover like everything's been a lie.
I don't know the twist in BioShock.
That's okay. I don't want to spoil that for you. I'm gonna make everybody in my life play BioShock at some point.
All right. Okay. I'll take your word for it on this.
This is very good.
All right. So
What's the spoiler in KOTOR?
Yeah, what's the spoiler in KOTOR?
So the impetus for the Sith invasion is that these two Sith lords, Darth Revan and Darth Malak, they kind of find the Starforge at some point, and they come back with this huge, like, automated fleet. And at a certain point, the Jedi Council sends out, like, a strike force to defeat Revan, or kind of, like, just capture Revan. Like, just take him out of the picture, because they don't think Malak would be an effective leader. Malak takes this, like, brief moment of, like, chaos to shoot on his own master, becoming, like, the new head honcho. It ends up being more effective than they thought. But everybody thinks Darth Revan is dead, but it turns out that the Jedi Council used, like, weird Jedi mind techniques to wipe his mind, and therefore making you Revan.
Whoa!
So you've been following... Yeah, and a lot of it is you're following, like, these holograms.
I am become Revan!
Yeah, you follow these holograms of Revan, and, like, you kind of have these flashbacks of, like, all these locations, and then you discover, say, maybe a little more than halfway, that you are Darth Revan.
Wow, that's... Okay.
And, like, honestly, I didn't see it coming.
That's so cool! And hey, now I don't have to play the game, which as a Star Trek fan just improves my street cred 100%.
Because they leave you to believe you're having all these, like, Force visions just because, like, Darth Revan and Darth Malak were such powerful Jedi or whatever. And, like, and their events were so consequential that you're just, like,
viewing these. I just now realize that you motherfuckers brought Star Wars and Star Trek to
I was going
to
bring it up in the end! Because here's the thing. Forever, Jeff has wanted to host a Versus episode between me and Eddie Ryan about Star Wars and Star Trek. And now he has to choose Star Wars versus Star Trek between me and Eddie Ryan Musbarger.
To be honest, I'm a little torn on it because through all of the different media of Star Wars, they've shown that Star Wars is a pretty, like, technologically stoic, like, unchanging throughout the time. KOTOR takes place thousands of years before the actual trilogy.
It's exactly the same.
But then Star Trek is full of pussies, so what are they going to do? Jean-Luc Picard's a badass, but he's still, like, a big old wuss bag sometimes at the same time.
He's diplomatic. You want to talk badass? Let's look at Deep Space Nine, season 6, episode 19, in the pale moonlight.
Right
tell me, Captain Sisko is not the coolest fucking dude you've ever seen?
I would say Captain Sisko, if any of them, is the most aggressive and, like, most badass of all. Like, well, he starts out as a commander, but he becomes a captain.
Yeah.
Like,
I gotta say, like, I still don't know how much you know about Star Trek, and this episode is, like, slowly peeling back the layers for me, and I'm so happy.
I would say, yeah.
You're killing me. You're both killing me.
Man, I'm always so happy finding someone who knows, perhaps as much as I do, how terrible and dark this hole is.
I mean, I don't know if I don't have, like, episodic knowledge. Like, I can't pop out season 6 episode whatever, but I've seen almost all even Star Trek Enterprise. I think I've seen all the seasons. It's just been a while.
Well, I haven't seen all the Star Wars movies because I haven't seen Solo. Oops.
Neither have I.
I've seen bits of Solo since I work in a movie theater and have to walk into it every once in a while.
I've had the twist in Solo spoiled for me.
I don't know if I know the twist in Solo.
Darth Maul?
I know that. Yeah, I know that one.
That's it.
Okay.
That is the quote-unquote
twist. Yeah, you know what? I could talk about that a lot, but I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know how it's handled.
Let's talk about the idea of Solo, a Star Wars story.
Completely fucking unnecessary.
Let's talk about, you know, like, this started out as a thing about nonlinear storytelling, but I do want to talk a little bit about the way that these stories kind of use butterfly effect. It seems a little bit more present in Ryan's domain than Colin's, but I think
that's because I didn't tell you about the scene where they zoom in on the parasites in his brain, and it's actually like 80 little butterflies on his neurons.
Is that a joke? Or is that a real thing?
No, it's not.
They shape them up like butterflies. Fuck that.
Did they really? Okay.
No, they did not. Oh, okay. No, they're just little blobs.
To a degree, right, it does also follow the idea of, like, because they kill the things, then it does change the past, which leads to A and B, right? It just probably, I think, from the way you described it, doesn't really explore that as much about, like, how all the little changes that it makes, you know? Question mark? Colin?
Are you talking about KOTOR?
Well, not Colin, okay. But his domain.
Sorry, you're going to have to... Yeah, Sorry, I missed like the first 3 seconds of what you said, and I spent the rest of what you said trying to figure out what the first 3 seconds were. So if you could say the whole thing again, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm saying, like, it may not explore Butterfly Effect in the same way that Run, Lola, Run and KOTOR do, but it does, mm-hmm. like, the whole premise of it, right, is that they want to destroy these little parasites so that the future will be different, right? Because they also get destroyed in the past, right? So in a way, it does, like, explore how it goes into different timelines. It just doesn't explore, like, the butterfly effect in the sense that, it, like, all the little changes that make things drastically different.
Yeah, it's not necessarily, it's much more of like a personal story. It's a bottle episode, it's a time travel story, but it does have some of those same deterministic, fatalistic themes mm-hmm. at its core. And some of that is supported by some of the other Easter eggs they have in the episode. I mentioned SETI Alpha 5 earlier. That's the planet that Khan is marooned on in Space Seed in Star Trek 2. So, like, right. they're pulling in all these extra things just to show how differently this world is affected just in this short period right. of time. Because we know SETI Alpha 5 to be uninhabited. But now there's, like, an entire mini-civilization of humans living there.
God, I really fucking wish we could go into a discussion comparing this specific episode of Star Trek to the most recent season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but that is not where we're at today.
No, it is not where we're at today. I do need to finish the season. I really enjoy what I saw so far.
I stopped watching like a season back. Once they brought in Ghost Rider, I was like, meh.
That was my favorite season.
Really?
That was fun. Yeah, I liked Ghost Rider's inclusion.
Season 4 was this is a very good season.
The more I watched it, the more I found myself hate watching it.
Oh, okay. Well, then if you hate watching it, then you
I disagree with a lot of the core decisions that were made in the last season, which mostly are revealed in the ending. That's all I'm really going to say about it. But I want to talk to you about that once you watch it.
Yeah, we'll figure that
since
out.
Since no one else does.
But no, I mean, again, I really actually, I kind of want to give Ryan the award just because the idea
hey,
of...
that's cool.
That's nice. I'm happy I'm that host, you're so the one who's matter. Making this decision and not me.
I just said I'm not the host. It doesn't fucking matter. Colin Ketchin, 2018.
Oh, that part cut out.
Convenient. So the idea of Run Lola Run, comparing it to a video game, especially... and I ham-fisted the New Game Plus thing in there, but looking at Twilight, it doesn't really have the same idea that your domains do of, like, taking what you have and revisiting it. It's more about just, like, it's about undoing a thing. So, I like, the non-linear is there, but your guys' things are bound by that. And actually, I think that's the thing that I'm most interested in, and it makes me look at this movie in a whole different light, considering how much I waste my time on video games.
Yeah, no, I think that, like, when I talked about it in classes in college, I think that there were, like, comparisons drawn to the fact that the movie is kind of like a video game in its nature. Even some of the music is, like, kind of techno-y and sort of, like, not, like...
Well, you can also attribute that to... 1998.
Yeah, no, that's true, but like true. Coupled with like the themes that it has of like oh showing how the different choices you make can affect the future, it is kind of like one of those stories, even if it predates you know like some of the earlier aspects of it. It's the same. It is the same kind of thing.
It is, and once I realized what was going on, it was exciting at first, and then I kind of got a little bit like, okay, let's see what happens.
Yeah.
But by the end, I sort of appreciated the fact that it relegated those bits of its identity to thematic stuff.
Yeah.
Instead of overt dialogue. Like, it never acknowledges diegetically what it is. It just is what it is. And it gives you the tools to digest it. And I think I always appreciate
it. Right.
That.
Like, Lola never brings up the fact that she remembers stuff from the past because it's like, oh, does she? Maybe, kind of. It's more like, oh, she has some little bits of memory that are, like, maybe more akin to, like, muscle memory than, like, an actual conscious recall of the events.
Yeah.
True. Yeah, I think it's more along the lines of that, because based on what happened in the first one, she definitely would not go back to her dad if she had, like, full memory.
Yeah, that's, true. But, like, she's got the memory, like, in the first one, right, at the very end, it ends with her not having the money, so her and Manny go and rob a store, right?
Yeah.
And he teaches her how to, like, take the safety off of her gun, right?
And then she carries that forward.
It's like, oh, I've never shot a gun before, how do I use this?
Yeah, exactly. And then the second time, when she's robbing the bank, someone's like, you don't know how to use this gun, and then she switches the safety off and shoots it. So it's, like, clear that she's got some recollection, because she did not know that in the first one.
Maybe it's a bit like Star Trek The Next Generation Season 5 Episode 19 Cause and Effect, when they're going through the time loop and the data sends a threes forward, which caused them to recognize threes all over the ship, recognizing Riker's numbers that they can blow open the compartment bay and avoid Kelsey Grammer.
Yeah, probably. Oh, it's exactly like that thing that I'm very familiar with.
You just had that one in the chamber.
That's like my, it's one of my favorite
episodes.
He's got
everyone in the chamber.
it's kind of disgusting. Everyone in the chamber. That's my vote for episode title. Because without context, it kind of sounds like we're saying everyone in the chamber, and it's like really fucked up.
Yeah, like Colin just has a box in his house full of people that. All right. Well, I think that perhaps I think that we have left plenty of room open for there to be a different episode on nonlinear storytelling and get more into the meat of how that's used. But I think we still had a fun discussion about what we had to talk about.
I have a special request.
Yeah. What's up?
Can we do an episode about extremely linear storytelling and talk about Inception?
I guess.
Like unflinchingly, rigidly, incredibly linear.
What makes Inception more linear?
Because
than...
you have like four linear things happening at the same time at different speeds. You gotta like keep multiplication tables in your head.
I guess so. Sure.
Wouldn't that be multilinear though?
Yeah, that's still like less linear storytelling than just like a straight up linear storytelling like rom-com or something bullshit with no flashbacks.
It's more complicated, but it is super linear because everything intercuts and like lines up across the timelines perfectly.
Yeah, I guess that's true, but...
Doesn't he have some kind of flashback?
But if it's all happening at the same time, then they have to do a little bit of backtrack, otherwise they'd just be showing four things at the same time.
But they don't do a little bit of backtrack. There's like the overlap, but it's not like they're jumping back to cover things. They're showing things as cleanly as they can.
I think I'm looking at the Wikipedia for nonlinear storytelling, and one of the trademarks of it is... parallel distinctive plot.
Oh shit.
But so. But parallel distinctive, this is a rectangle square sort of situation where parallel distinctive plot lines do not a nonlinear story make.
No, I mean, I think that a nonlinear story can mean more things than it just jumps back and forth between the past and the...
I think it's anything that's different than A goes to B.
Yeah, exactly.
If A is going to B and C is going to D and you're showing both journeys, that's nonlinear.
Yeah, exactly.
Then maybe we should do, and I haven't seen it, maybe we should do Birdman then.
Is Birdman...
You haven't seen Birdman?
It's like the whole movie's like one shot.
I've seen Birdman, but I'm trying to think if there's like flashbacks.
It's several shots. There is a movie out there that is actually one shot for the entire film, and it took them like 3 days to film because they fucked up twice.
Well, I know they edited it together, but it's like, there are no cuts. There are no visible cuts. In Birdman.
No, yeah, but the movie I'm talking about, like, it's actually the entire movie is all one
really?
Shot. Yeah. And there are cuts in Birdman. They just have really long shots.
So, wait, now I'm thinking it'd be fun to do, see if you can do one camera, like, start and stop recording, but somehow tell a nonlinear story.
I want to say Stanley Kubrick did a movie like that where it was all one cut, but I can't remember.
I think it might have been a Stanley Kubrick film.
I think it was 2001 A Space Odyssey, because as soon as someone pushed play, I fell asleep, and it was black for 8 hours.
You don't like 2001?
No, it's just very long.
Oh my god. I was going to say you suck.
Anyway, regardless of what this episode ended up being about, I think that we had a pretty good discussion. We did not receive any listener questions for this week.
Yeah, come on, step it up.
But if you would like to submit one yourself to have it read out in an episode to give us a little bit more to talk about other than our own pontificating, then you can just comment on the posts that we make every Monday before an episode is recorded.
Asterisk, mostly. Every Monday, if Colin remembers.
Exactly. But other than that, I think we're at a good place to move on to dem ratings, right, guys?
Let's rate this bitch.
All right, thanks guys for a fucking very jumbled up and nonlinear discussion, because maybe that's the way I'll edit it, just to make things confusing.
Yeah, I was about to say, you should just put the segments out of order.
It's Eyes Wide Shut by Stanley Kubrick.
That sounds like it would be really fun, but it also sounds like it would be a lot of work.
Or what you could do is just not sync up our audio so that in the middle of the ratings, Ryan says, Eyes Wide Shut by Stanley Kubrick.
Either way, we're going to be moving on to the ratings section, and we are going to have our representatives... Fuck. God damn it. Rate this topic on a scale from 1 to 5.
Blind ladies leaning against a phone booth.
No. I think we're going to have to rate this on a scale of 1 to 5 do-overs. Like, how many times do you have to get through this episode before you win the gold star?
So does that mean for every do-over out of 5 that I give this, I need to start my rating explanation over again? Because then I'm just going to give it a 0.
So, no. It does not mean that. What it does mean is that I'm going to make this episode 3 times its natural length and just put the audio 3 times, but choose to edit out different sections of it each time. If I were really smart, I would have had us record this to be about a third of the length of a normal episode and actually do that, but that would be fucking ridiculous.
That would have been so cool. Anyway.
1 to 5 do-overs. How are we feeling, Colin?
1 to 5 do-overs. So... Hi, I'm Colin Ketchin, your geeky, nerdy perspective for the week.
Your only perspective.
And all the rest of us are just dog shit.
The way Colin sees things is the only way.
No, I was doing the do-over. That's how I introduced myself at the beginning of the episode. Come on, guys. This is. We just had a nice, intimate pillow conversation, the three of us, in red lighting.
Yeah.
Don't you know that
well,
signals...
we're not smoking cigarettes, so how can it be German in 1998?
Colin, I'll admit right now that if you die, that, you know, I'm not even going to try to argue. I'd get over it in a couple of weeks. No, I'm just kidding. It would take me at least a month.
So I think, well, yeah, just for the schedule of the lineup, right? So
yeah,
I think that the, I think I'm going to rate Lola Rent. I think I'm going to rate it 4 out of 5.
All right.
Probably, maybe a little less than that, but I've been having a really fun time with this conversation about it. And the movie, for all my criticisms about it, it's very campy nature, it's distracting soundtrack, and...
I like the soundtrack a lot.
It's just...
I think it has to be distracting, considering it's playing over scenes of her running.
That's true.
It's portraying the kind of breakneck speed and like this kind of heart pumping feeling.
Yeah.
Oh, it was not lost on me. It was not lost on me one bit. It made me think of Dunkirk, a movie where they did that, and it was good. But it's just like, I think that there are a lot of elements that work against the film, particularly just because of it's supposed to be a very, it's low budget. It's supposed to have this style that is just like a very in your face. It has like a very punk attitude start to finish, especially the fact that it's about like some 20 somethings, both with like either bleached or dyed hair, running around stealing money and like, you know, fucking other people up like that. That's the movie. So some of that worked against it. But all in all, I can see why the movie is as well acclaimed as it is. It is interesting. It gives you a lot to chew on, and it is smart about the way it gives you information, because it takes those silly things that could easily rip you out of it and turns them into fuel for something deeper.
All right, Ryan, how do you feel?
I want to preface my rating. This is the first time I've seen this film.
Okay.
I think I mentioned to you guys, freshman year of college.
Did.
So I'll paint why my expectations were so low. So... when I first watched this, and I put, like, I'll say watch in quote, like, air quotes, my friend was like, oh, yeah, it was freshman year of college. My roommate was like, oh, do you like movies? I was like, yeah, I guess I'd like watch movies. Everybody
like
loves
movies?
Watch movies. Yes. Do you want to watch, like, this weird kind of trippy film? I'm like, yeah, sure, it's college.
I was like, oh, you're asking, do you like films?
Yeah. And I was like, sure, I like movies. And he's like, oh, do you want to watch this kind of, like, trippy, weird kind of German film? I was like, whatever, I'll watch porn, it's fine. No, but he ended up like, oh, it's just kind of weird. It's called Run, Lola, Run. And the stream that we were able to find,
I just blew up my audio.
Which is, I think, a similar issue that we had in the beginning of this, is it wasn't subtitled.
Oh, my God.
So he was like, oh, no, it's cool. I speak German. I'll just translate actively for you. Within the first 5 minutes, like, so basically that first scene with like the telephone where it's like really establishing the crux of the problem of the movie. Like, oh, I need money and I need you to help. He's like, oh yeah. So he's like telling her right now that he made a mistake. So this went on for like 15 minutes of him like kind
of... Oh my God.
Just semi...
Did he like pause the movie, or did he just like cram as much into each individual like second as he could?
He did both. So it was just really bad. And after about 30 minutes, I was super confused. And I mean, he spoke like fluent German, but I think it's very different from like speaking German and then like actively translating
explaining
it and explaining in a way
yeah,
that
yeah.
is good.
Yeah.
So I just had like these terrible memories of this movie. And when you told me Run Lola Run, I was like, oh fuck, not this fucking thing again. And then when I watched it, like, I had this kind of like, whatever, I'll just get it over with. And like, after the first storyline finished, I was like really into it. And I really enjoyed the movie. Like, even the beginning when I wasn't trying to like take it so seriously. And I was kind of like, oh, this movie is like, it actually started to get me. And I actually really enjoyed it. And I think, I don't know whether I would have enjoyed it on its own before or whether it was like the super low expectations of thinking it was a bad movie. But I'd give it like a four, a solid four, maybe four out of more 4.5 do-overs.
All right.
Because I got my own do-over with this movie.
There you go. That thematic relevance. Well, I'm happy that it only took you guys one more do-over than Lola to get things right with your lives. More
you
or less, probably.
I hate you for that joke.
I guess, like, the lower you would have rated it, the more successful you would have been. I don't know. But
one do-over. This movie sucks. I could have done it in one. Fuck this movie.
Or I guess really it took you two more, because she only had two do-overs, not three.
True.
Anyway, we are going to be moving on, and I'm going to be handing out the Gold Star Student Award, and I'll be giving it to the person who I think just kind of best contributed to this episode of the podcast and brought the best stuff to talk about. This is rough.
What's the award going to be?
You know what? I made a pun by accident, and that's what I'm going to go. We're going to go with the golden little fucking cartoon pit bull whatever dog it was at
rough.
The beginning. Yeah.
Solid.
So we're gonna go with the golden cartoon
little puppy dog.
Would we call that a pit bull? Do you think that's the
it
best?
Was not a pit bull. It
not
looks
a pit bull. What would we more like a
Rottweiler maybe, or
like a fucking what are those dogs that they've got like they're like really angry dogs and they've got like the snooty mouth as opposed to like a pug or a oh yeah pit bulls are the ones with the flat faces
right
what are they called?
No,
it's I mean, looking at a still image from the cartoon portion, I would say amorphous blob kind of covers dog pretty well for this movie.
Yeah, that's kind of my thing. It kind of looks like a capybara that has a party hat stuck on its nose.
A bull terrier is what I'm thinking of.
Bull terrier.
Now I gotta look this up because I don't know what the fuck a bull terrier is.
Very common German dog. Oh, I wouldn't be scared of that.
You see it?
Yeah, Jeff, that's the one.
That's it?
I would say this is the most amorphous blob-looking dog I've seen in a while.
Okay, but if you had to pick a dog, it would be a bull terrier.
Yeah, right?
I do agree with Ryan, for the record. It is an amorphous blob.
It is definitely an amorphous blob. But, alright, so today the golden amorphous blob bull terrier cartoon, I think, is going to be going to Ryan.
Hey!
Because I think we got a lot of good discussion out of Ryan's domain, which I feel bad for saying that because Colin's domain definitely is more of a non-linear story than both the topic and Ryan's domain.
Hey, according to Wikipedia, I'm fucking great. And I want now to cue the John Williams fanfare.
But I think we got a lot of good discussion out of that. And I think Ryan said some pretty poignant things, which, again, I say this every episode. I always mean to write them down so that I know what I'm talking about, but I always forget. But that's the way it goes.
Hey, I called a dog an amorphous blob. That's pretty poignant.
But yeah, fucking John Williams fanfare aside, I think that's about time for us to wrap it up. Thank you all for listening to the Comic Geeking Program. Again, I am Jeff Levitt, and I guess really the best place to find me is on my Instagram. It is called Things I Wish Existed, and there's a dot between each word. It's like it's an art Instagram. I put some art stuff on there sometimes.
The weird thing about it, because I tried to look it up, is I thought it would be things.i.wish, but it's actually Things I Wish Existed with a dot between each word, like all spelled out, and it's really confusing.
That's a lie. That's a lie. For the record, funny joke, untrue statement.
Fuck, now I need to get this Instagram.
Again, I have been joined by Colin Ketchin. And Ryan, is the G in your last name hard or soft? I need to know this now before I fuck it up 1,000 times.
Moss Barger, so it's kind of hard.
Barger, oh, I said it wrong.
He's a rock hard G.
I'd say it's medium.
I said it Barger earlier, and I apologize for that. But, okay, I've been joined by Colin Ketchin and Ryan Mossbarger. Do you guys want to pimp any places out that you exist on?
You can find me online at SonicColinK on like Twitter and Facebook and Xbox and SoundCloud and YouTube and stuff.
You can find me on Twitter at Ryan_MOSSB and be thrilled by the 4 tweets I've done in my lifetime, mostly accusing Jay Leno of something called espionage.
I'm gonna leave that without context to keep it funnier to myself. I was really hoping your Twitter would be fake Ryan Mossbarger, though.
Oh yeah, because fake Eddie Ryan.
Fake Eddie Ryan.
No, I'm not that cool. Well, it's accusing Jay Leno of espionage and then yelling at Comcast for not giving me cheap cable. So it's those two
Sounds
things.
Sounds like some fucking quality content. All right, either way, our next episode is going to be hosted by Ryan. It's going to be his very first episode. Aw, they grow up so fast, I guess.
He's 2 weeks old?
That episode's going to be airing on the 17th of August, and what's it going to be about, Ryan?
It's going to be about Critical Role.
Did you fucking forget? Did you have to look that up?
A Geek and Sundry will now be newly independent stream, but originally a Geek and Sundry stream about a bunch of nerdy-ass voice actors playing Dungeons & Dragons.
Nerdy-ass voice actors?
I didn't know they split. That's crazy.
They have some kind of agreement now where they're still, I think, partially under Geek and Sundry, but they're, like, in their own studio space, and I think they're kind of doing their own thing. They were the most popular thing by far ever since they stopped the tabletop show on there, so.
All right. Well, thanks, guys, for that. I X'd out of the thing for a sec, so I have to reopen it. That's where we're at right now.
I'm looking at my cat's butt, so if I read that, there would not be a fun conversation.
Oh, I also accused the Patriots of espionage on last year's Super Bowl.
What? Okay. Sorry, you're meaning to say espionage, right?
Yeah,
or
espionage.
Are you talking about espionage? Okay.
A-S-S-P-I-O-N.
Is that like sticking a finger in someone's butt without asking them?
It's espionage.
Or
but
is
using
it more
butts.
Like spying on butts? Is it like spying on butts?
It's spying with butts. Dang, I also accused Julian Assange.
Damn.
Hashtag espionage.
Why?
He's probably the closest to actually that.
Why is your Twitter exclusively accusing people of espionage?
I don't know. And then I say Broncos go home and nurse your wounds. Hashtag sweet sticky bud.
Okay.
I guess I'm a bit of a Twitter auteur and I don't even know.
I guess you really don't need to go check out Ryan's Twitter because he's just now told us every single one of the posts he's ever made. But either way, his episode is going to be airing next week, next Friday on the 17th of August. So without further ado, you guys should follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Geeking Program. Any engagement, such as sharing a post, tagging us or tweeting hashtag CGP will enter you into a raffle, and you can get to pick a topic for a future episode. We've had some fun ones so far, like the Black Panther episode and the what was it? The
Dear White People.
Yeah, those were good ones.
Did you guys read my question for
Dear
White People?
Not having listened to the latter?
Yes, we did.
Thanks.
Was it by a white person? Oh, it was by you.
Yeah, it was
you
by me, that. So yes.
Your question.
Well, I met Ryan as a guy with a picture of an Asian man in blackface, so I'm very confused as to his his ethnicity.
All right.
We'll leave it as a question mark. I am an enigma, wrapped in an illusion, masked in mystery.
Oh my god.
This episode needs to end now.
Yeah, this is derailing. Guys, and also reviewing us on Apple Podcasts is a very, very helpful way of growing our show, and we'll read any new reviews on the air. Do we have any? Do you know?
Nope.
Oh. Anyways, thank you all for listening, subscribing, sharing, and everything else. And as always, we're going to be talking to you next week. So bye.
This episode of the Common Geeking Program was hosted by yours truly, Jeff Levitt, joined by the representatives Colin Ketchin and Ryan Mossbarger. This episode is sponsored by J. Robert Oppenheimer. The podcast is created and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levitt, with this episode edited by me, Jeff Levitt. as well as Timewheel Chowdhury, and featuring original music by Colin Ketcham. Next week, we'll be talking about Critical Role and storytelling, so be sure to tune in for that on August 17th. And as always, thank you for listening to this.
You know what? We're going to do 45-45.
45-45.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to do all these seconds. Oh, my God.
Wait, I have to pee. You think I could get that done?
No.
You have 5 seconds.
What if I start peeing right now and don't get up and finish after? I was all asking your permission to pee on my couch.
I mean, you can pee on your couch if you want to now that that clap is over.
Okay, I'll give you a hot dog if you clean it.
I don't think I want a hot dog as a prize for that.
As a prize? A
hot dog would be a real rough snack after cleaning pee off a couch, I can tell you.
Nor
that.
Nor do I want to clean it.
I do like your use of the word prize instead of, like, compensation.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, you know, if I do it successfully, I've won an award of a hot dog.
It's a competition.